We have our second case of this afternoon, the number 20-3638, Matrix Distributors, Inc. et al., the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy et al. And we have Mr. Conan for the appellants and Mr. Casey for NAPB, National Association of Boards of Pharmacy, and Mr. Asmus for OptumRx. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Mr. Conan, whenever you're ready.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. If it please the court, if I could reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
No problem at all.
Okay. Your Honor, my name is Brian Cullen. I'm with the firm of Barclay Damon, and we're appearing today on behalf of the appellants, PrimeMed Pharmaceuticals and Oak Drugs, in this case that stems from the 2016 implementation by the defendant OptumRx of a requirement that all pharmacies in its pharmacy benefit network source pharmaceuticals, secondary wholesalers that had obtained called VAUD accreditation from the other defendant in this case, the National Association of Board of Pharmacy. I think,
Can I start with the Section 1983 claims? Where I'm having a big problem is how is NAPB a state actor?
Sure, Your Honor. I think that obviously is the threshold question that we have to deal with in this entire case. And I think that as we have laid out in our briefs, whether you're looking at it under the entwinement theory or the rather closely related symbiotic relationship.
Mr. Cullen,
yes.
Is OptumRx right that you're not arguing that OptumRx is a state actor? Are we just talking NABP at the moment?
No, that would not be correct. We are arguing only if the court finds that NABP is a state actor. We believe that then OptumRx is a state actor. Any private actor that has kind of joined itself in partnership with a public actor at that point in time.
Okay, so just to be clear, proceed.
Yeah, if the court finds that NABP is not a state actor, then Optum is not a state actor. We would concede that point. So.
You're saying so if NAPP is a state actor, then somehow OptumRx is as well, because somehow it's involved?
We would argue that basically having basically enjoined the joint activities with a state actor in this particular case here, they would be.
All right, that's going uphill. Let's focus on NAPP because that may resolve it. How, under Tarkanian and Brentwood, would it be a state actor?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. With respect to all of those cases, I think it's very clear the Supreme Court has taken the position that these cases are necessarily, they're fact specific. There is not one particular piece of evidence that's going to be dispositive of whether they're a state actor or not. If you look at the court,
Brentwood was confined to a state, right?
That's correct.
And Tarkanian was with the, I remember well the fight that Jerry Tarkanian had with the NCAA. And
correct.
There you have a group across the country. So you're not really citing Tarkanian. It says basically it has to be within a, if it's within a state. Who is the state actor here? What I'm trying to figure out.
Well, I think our argument here is that NABP is the state actor. I think the issue I think that you're getting
which state is it affiliated
with? Well, that's what I'm trying to get at, Your Honor. I think that the point that you're making, and I think Judge McNulty made it in the court below, is that in order for the plaintiffs in this case to establish that there is that NABP is a state actor, we have to establish that somehow they are acting as a surrogate for some individual state. And we would disagree with that particular proposition. I mean, in essence, as we point out in our papers, there are currently four states that require VAUD accreditation in order to be a licensed wholesaler in that state. There are another 22 states that recognize that the VAUD accreditation. And what I mean by recognize, it might mean, for example, that if I'm a wholesaler is applying for a license in a given state. If they are VAWT accredited, they don't need to go through certain inspections that might otherwise be.
Mr. Cullinan, I think your strongest argument would have been if you had some specific allegations about harming your business in those four states that it looks like from the response briefs that two of the four have since changed their laws, except doesn't look like there's anywhere where you focus specifically on the harm to you in those states. Your theory seems to be that you're being hurt in your nationwide business here. So where have you preserved a challenge that's really specific to those two or four states?
I don't think that we have, Your Honor. I think
you have. Okay, so you're making a more general argument here, which is that, okay, there are some states in which you automatically get in if you're under OptumRx, but there are other ways in and you're not precluded. It makes life more difficult for you.
Well, I think to focus on the point that you're looking at is, you know, one of the states, for example, that requires VAWT accreditation is the state of Michigan. If, for example, a secondary wholesaler had been denied a license by the state of Indiana because it was not VAWT accredited, I don't think there's any question that that particular set of facts and circumstances, NABP would be a state actor.
I think you'd have a much stronger claim. What I'm saying, though, is your argument here, I've not found anywhere where you are focusing on the outputs, saying we are delicensed in Indiana because of X. Your focus here has all been on the inputs into NABP, which is NABP is being manipulated by the states. Maybe, maybe not. But if there's not coercion, state coercion, some state penalty or something that comes out on the back end, how can it be state action, right? In the state action cases like Brentwood, there's a penalty being levied on people. You know, NCAA, there was ultimately it wasn't state action. So you can say all you want that some state or states were involved in this decision, but if it's ultimately an advisory one that affects particular insurers and it's not something that says this insurer, this drug company will be penalized, then where's the state action?
Well, I think that getting back, I think you have to look at the nature of NABP, and this gets us into the various tests that have kind of developed over time.
Is there a penalty that comes out of what NABP does? Some state some fine?
Well, no, that's not the case. But it doesn't necessarily have to be. I mean, the practical reality of the VAWT requirement. And the plaintiffs in this case here, in our view, being denied VAWT accreditation based upon inappropriate criteria that are in violation of the DSCA, is that essentially our clients are foreclosed from selling pharmaceutical drugs to almost the entire drug supply chain.
Okay, that might be an antitrust violation. That might be a violation of federal law, though I haven't really seen you cite a conflict.
And there might even be a violation conceivably of certain New Jersey common law, but in 1983, it requires a state actor. Tarkanian it says that the NCAA was not a state actor because in significant part because Nevada did not play a significant role in crafting the NCAA rules that affected Coach Tarkanian. And yet, while that case is good law, hasn't been overruled, you only cite it once, I think, on page 30 of your brief. And I'm having trouble seeing how can you get around it. You can't just ignore it.
No, we're not ignoring it. There is a unique set of circumstances in the Tarkanian case, because in essence, as the court kind of discusses towards the tail end of the decision, is that in that particular case, you know, there was a discussion as to whether Nevada was a state actor. The court also recognized that as a practical matter, the state of Nevada and the NCAA adversaries in that particular situation. They were not essentially where their interests were aligned. And the whole point behind the state actor theory, whether just look at an entity.
That led to Judge Bibas's question. Okay, there are four states that are particularly relevant here, and yet there's no argument that any of those four states were so involved in this process that they would be the predominant player or even had a significant role in crafting the particular rules that were in play here?
Well, I think that this gets us back, Your Honor, to the whole nature of NABP and the whole entwinement part to begin with. I mean, you look at NABP, every single one of its member state boards are a state actor. Every single member of its executive committee is a state actor.
Well, you say state actor, they are states, but they are not necessarily acting as states in the actions that are occurring here. So calling them state actors, I think by you, is putting in a term that you haven't proved to us yet, demonstrated to us yet, belongs there.
I'm saying, for example, a state board of pharmacy. I think it's fair to say, with all due respect, they are a state actor.
Okay, but
what has happened is
you have to be acting on behalf of a particular state, and which particular state are you relying
on? Well, that's what if what we are saying in this particular case here is that essentially, you know, getting back to my example with Indiana from before, I think that there would be no question that there is a state actor. I think what we are essentially arguing in this particular case here is that NABP and essentially their member state boards cannot collectively do what a single state member board could not do on its own. And in that particular, and for that reason, in a case where there is no question that the member state boards are entwined with the operations of NABP, and where there is, it's clearly, I think the record shows, that there are joint beneficial activities between the states and NABP, that comes in the form of both the kind of offshoring or offloading of regulatory responsibilities by the states to NABP. And in exchange, NABP is, you know, gone from being kind of a mom and pop shop back in the 1980s to now this, behemoth that's now bringing in $35 million a year in annual revenues. It has 150 employees. It is taking on all sorts of activities that the states would ordinarily otherwise be doing. Pharmacy licensure, reports to the National Practitioner Data Bank. We talked before about the number of states that where VAUD accreditation is required. There are other accreditation programs that NABP is taking on. And then when you get back to the last piece of this with respect to how is the action complained of, the VAUD accreditation linked to any of these joint beneficial activities, I think it's very clear it falls right within the ambit of the activities make it so that, you know, it would not be unreasonable to impose upon NABP as it performs these duties. And, you know, we've cited to the statements of the executive director, Mr. Catazon, in our brief. He said that the VAUD program was developed by NABP, quote, under the direction of the state boards of pharmacy, close quote. And that through VAUD, NABP accredits wholesalers, quote, on behalf of the states, close quote.
But how does OptumRx get into that? OptumRx wasn't forced by NAPB to adopt the criterion it did of who it's going to deal with.
Correct. OptumRx in 2016 decided that it wanted to impose upon its pharmacy network the requirement that but by doing so it injected itself into the situation here.
It's a private actor. It chose to do it. Maybe it got an antitrust problem, maybe it got a conflict with federal health law, but where's the state coercion? Where's the penalty? Where's the what makes this actionable under 1983?
Well, I think, Your Honor, I think we're looking at this in terms of from an economic reality situation here.
You know, I think you have a more interesting argument to make under federal common law than you do under state actor. And I would be more interested in hearing you talk about that.
And then after that, I'd be interested in hearing you talk about the New Jersey due process common law.
Okay.
So sure, could you preface it by telling us whether you in fact preserve the federal common law argument?
We believe, yes.
I couldn't.
Yes, we believe that we did, Your Honor. I mean, I think if you look at the complaint and that it was a generic common law count. We cited to recognizing that this was an alternative theory before the court below. We recited to both federal cases as well as to New Jersey state law in arguing about it. Pick up on, you know, Judge Roth's point is that I think the argument from our perspective is, you know, if they are not a state actor, then there comes a point in time where this court is going to look at the situation as to whether they are a quasi-public entity that is involved in an area of vital public concern. And if they are, there is the federal common law that kind of stems from the seminal Falcone case that was decided, ironically, in the state of New Jersey, and then both the New Jersey state cases as well that provide that where we have economic necessity, as we do here, and a situation where NABP is essentially exercising monopoly power over the area of accreditation. That was certainly the case when OptumRx imposed this requirement in 2016. It was not until 2019 that there was that a second accreditation entity came into play. But at that point in time, it was because of the economic necessity and the fact that NABP exercised a monopoly in this particular accreditation area, we would argue that if the court were to conclude that they're not a state actor, at a minimum, they are a quasi-public entity for whom reasonable due process must attach. And in this particular case here, it was inappropriate for the court below to dismiss this at the motion to dismiss stage. And I think the other key point on this area that NABP raises is that there is this notion that somehow we had to be a member of something in order to have a common law due process claim. And we believe that that is clearly not right. In the Falcone case that talks about a medical society in which the doctor was not a member, and in the Moore case where it involved a labor union, the court was very clear to draw distinctions between fraternal organizations and organizations of business necessity.
Mr. Coleman, the cases you're citing are, as you say, like Falcone, are about an organization's exclusion of members. So we would have to go and extend these principles of law, New Jersey law, in order to cover this situation, because your claim is not that your clients were excluded from membership.
Well, essentially, we are in this particular. We were excluded from obtaining accreditation, and I think the cases, the federal cases that we cited in our brief, are very clear on the point. Is that where they're involved in, as NABP is in this particular case here, in areas of vital concern, and are almost like a quasi regulator. That at that point in time, they are a quasi-public entity for who it is reasonable to impose due process requirements upon them.
But in the federal cases, you had Title IV funding, federal funding from the government, right?
There were some in that case there, but there's also cases that involve education, but there's others that involve the ability to carry on with schools and the like. We understand that there's the Marjorie Taylor case that was another accrediting case that imposed that actually that case there, although it was overturned on other grounds, actually did rule that they were a state actor in that particular case. But getting back to Judge Bevis's point, I don't believe.
Looking at the cases on page 34 and 35 of your opening. Okay, I do see. You mean Marjorie Webster?
Marjorie Webster. I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah. Which. Okay.
I'm sorry, I have somebody else's name from the news on my brain, I think.
Yeah, I think that's it. I don't think Marjorie Webster exists anymore.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
But you're mixing and matching the federal and New Jersey. Let's just deal with the federal. One of the most basic conditions that must be met before you can have federal common law involved is that it must be necessary to protect a uniquely federal interest. what is the uniquely federal interest here?
Well, I think in this case here, it's, you know, we have a, there's a place where the court, where Congress has stepped in with respect to the regulation of the drug supply chain. And, you know, we have the defendants in this particular case here, you know, through the imposition of criteria that go beyond the DSCSA, which has an express preemption provision in it, you know, it is clearly something that would be of import for federal common law purposes.
What about the decision of the private third party, OptumRx, to adopt the requirements that it did? Isn't that, again, a private third party stepping in who is creating the problem that you're complaining about in your complaint against NAPB?
Well, I think the issue in this particular case here is with respect to NABP is that NABP, everything kind of flows from what happens with the NABP in this particular case here. There is no due process as it pertains to the VAWD application process for folks that are involved. Just so I can kind of give you, just so the court understands the terms that we are using is that someone that submits an application to NABP for accreditation, one of two things happen. It's either going to be canceled, which is what happened in the cases of the plaintiffs in this particular case, or it's going to be denied. And usually when it's denied, it's somebody that has already obtained, already been accredited by NABP. So what's happened in the case that we have here, as it relates to the applicants that are being, that are merely being canceled, is they're essentially being told you have to reapply. There is no way for them to challenge the standards against which they are being held, which in this particular case we believe are violative of federal law. There is no new. There was kind of a hiding of the ball under in numerous circumstances. For in one of the cases here, there was a situation where the NABP denied the accreditation because they had allegedly sourced pharmaceuticals from a pharmacy. There's no such prohibition in federal law, and yet NABP refused to identify what the supposed problematic source was when it came time to go through this process. And then
the alleged harm is being caused by an independent third party.
Well, no, they're not independent in the sense that essentially Optum and NABP in this particular point in time, to use their term, this was a partnership. Because what happened was NABP going all the way back to 2006, when the VAWD program was established, was looking to try to impose its ideal of the regulation of the drug supply chain. It tried to lobby Congress to do that. It was unsuccessful in its efforts to do so. And then what happened was Optum comes along, and because of the economic necessity attendant to having to have be participants in their network, when they partnered with NABP to say, if you do not have VAWD accreditation, that you cannot participate in our network. It's 67,000 pharmacies across the country. It's virtually every pharmacy in across the land. So at that point in time,
that's like arguing that Facebook is a state actor or Amazon is, because if you can't sell your books on Amazon, you're going to lose a lot of money. I don't doubt there's economic harm here, but you can't jump from the economic harm to saying, thus, it's First Amendment censorship and Amazon is violating my constitutional rights.
No, I think that this, Your Honor, this is more akin to the Baffert versus New York Racing Association case that we cited to in our reply brief, and that essentially because of the, you know, NABP has tried to make the point that because we are not the one that's doing the licensing, we can't be a state actor. In the Baffert case, what the court held was is that even though it was the New York State Gaming Commission that was the one that licensed the horse trainer in that particular case, the action to exclude the horse trainer from the ability to participate in racing in the state of New York was made by the New York Racing Association. That could be the harm that was necessary in order to provide the basis for a deprivation of a property interest and for there to be a potential due process violation and by extension, a 1983 claim where the court ultimately ruled in favor of the horse trainer and awarded over $100,000 in attorney's fees attendant to the preliminary injunction application in that particular case. So I know that I'm way past my time at this stage.
What we'll do is I have some questions on the New Jersey due process, but we'll get you back in rebuttal to deal with those.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Casey.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Brian Casey.
It may be that you have 10 minutes. I don't know, and I'll let my colleagues decide to what extent we really have many questions for Mr. Asmus, but so we're going to spend maybe more than 2/3 of the time with you.
I am quite sure Mr. Asmus would be happy to have me take as much of his time as he would like.
Music to my ears.
good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Brian Casey. I'm here on behalf of the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy, otherwise known as NABP. I am splitting time with Mr. Asmus. I had expected to take about 10 minutes of the 15 minutes, but I'm happy to take as much or as little time as you would like.
One of the questions is in connection with the particular state. It's kind of tough to say it's one particular state here because the NABP's members are almost entirely made up of state boards of pharmacy from myriad states, if not all of them. Why is it enough if you just show involvement or entwinement with several states? Shouldn't that be enough for 1983 purposes?
No, it shouldn't be, Your Honor. Both the 14th Amendment and Section 1983 specifically refer to what any state shall do or what no state shall do.
The argument would be here that it's pretty much any state you can think of.
Well, the Supreme Court in Tarkanian, I think, pretty effectively foreclosed that. In Tarkanian, the NCAA was characterized as speaking on behalf of the collective membership, speaking as a group, instead of on behalf of any particular state. And that was among the reasons why the Supreme Court in Tarkanian said that the NCAA was not a state actor. As a matter of fact, that they there aren't any cases that...
I'm just thinking out loud. Is the NCAA made up of state actors, state boards? I mean, yes, there are state universities that are part of the NCAA, but here it's, you know, the New Jersey State Board, the California State Board, et cetera.
It isn't qualitatively different, but that leads to an important question. NABP, its members consist of the boards of pharmacy of all 50 states, the District of Columbia, 10 Canadian provinces, a number of U.S. territories, and Barbados. It includes members that are not in any way even part of the United States, let alone governed by the 14th Amendment. One of your particular examples was the New Jersey Board of Pharmacy. Yes, the New Jersey Board of Pharmacy is a member of NABP.
Aren't the states active members, whereas the Canadian provinces and the other non-U.S. boards of pharmacy are not active members in the same way that the state boards of pharmacy are?
There's a difference in terms of voting. That said, the D.C. Board of Pharmacy, which is also not governed by the 14th Amendment, is a voting member, as I understand. But to get back to Judge Ambrose's point, the New Jersey Board of Pharmacy is a member of the of NABP, and the New Jersey Board of Pharmacy is not, in fact, the entity within the state of New Jersey that licenses wholesale distributors. So that there isn't even an overlap in the particular state where Mr. Collins' clients do perhaps the most business. Neither New York nor New Jersey require any kind of VOD accreditation at all. As Mr. Cullen pointed out, there are four states that have some degree of requirement.
I'd like you, Mr. Casey, to focus on Iowa, Indiana, Wyoming, and North Dakota. I mean, those are states. Is it correct that they would be barred in those states from plying their trade if their pleadings had? He appeared to concede that he hadn't preserved a claim specific to those states, but if we had a different suit in front of us that involved those four states, wouldn't there be state action in just debarring people from doing business in those four states at all?
No, because the number one, each state board of pharmacy retains the discretion to license wholesale pharmacies. Even absent a VOD accreditation. A number of the states don't speak in particular to VOD accreditation as in particular, but speak to third-party accreditation. Several states now allow the other third-party accreditor, and the accreditation is simply a substitute for obtaining a bond. And in each of those states, there also is a degree of reciprocity. So that if entities are licensed in state one, even if there's a VOD requirement in state two, it certainly is possible that because of reciprocity, they would still be licensed. And to get back to your prior point, Your Honor, they haven't made any allegations that they are licensed in any of those states. They certainly haven't made any allegations that any of their licenses have been revoked or had any enforcement proceedings against them in any of those states. There's nothing about any of those states that really is germane here. I think the much more important point is 46 states don't have VOD accreditation or even any kind of third-party accreditation as a requirement. And in each instance, it is ultimately the state entity itself, whether it's the Board of Pharmacy or a different entity, that actually does the licensing, okay? And that is similar to several Third Circuit cases like the McKeesport case that talked about the ACGME, the accreditation entity for graduate medical education. And they said, hey, this accreditation is simply a tool that the state agency does. The state agency hasn't delegated responsibility to that entity to make the final decisions. It still is the state agency that makes the final licensing decision. And, as a result, even in those four states, it is the state itself that ultimately makes the licensing decisions. And as we said, they haven't alleged at all that any licenses have been impacted at all. And in fact, they haven't.
Let me just go as to the membership of the NABP. Mm-hmm. You state boards of pharmacy are members, are they not?
Correct.
And so if they are members, wouldn't that make NAPB at the very least a quasi-public organization?
No, Your Honor, it wouldn't, because whether you're talking about under the federal common law or the New Jersey common law.
I'm going to shift to the New Jersey common law.
Okay. Under the New Jersey common law, the Falcone case, the Moore case, and the Matthews case, each of those are very different. In Falcone and in Moore, Falcone was a doctor who had been a member of the society and ultimately was not allowed to be a permanent member because he was a doctor of osteopathy instead of a medical doctor. So he was being denied accreditation, basically excluded from membership in this organization that basically had a lock on, you couldn't practice surgery in the county if you weren't a member of the county society. Here, as they allege in their complaint, they're still doing business. None of their licenses have been revoked. As an aside, this is now just about damages because each of them have in fact been accredited. But they haven't said that, they have lost licenses as a result of that. So in Falcone, it absolutely was exclusion from an occupational society that was a prerequisite to doing business. Same with Moore. In Moore, that was itinerant union workers that were part of a different union were, for arbitrary reasons, being prohibited from joining this particular union. As a result, they weren't able to work in that particular area. It's, again, exclusion from membership in a society that is basically a prerequisite for employment. And Matthews, was basically a association was saying you had to be a resident of a particular area in order to have access to the beach. And they said that was, you can't do that. That isn't for the public good, things of that nature. Here we have NAVP is simply a third party independent accreditation agency. I have likened it to, it's the good housekeeping seal of approval for wholesale distributors, okay? We aren't preventing people from doing business, and as previously been said, the only reason this became an issue was because Optum thought it would be a good idea to have its network pharmacies only buy from wholesale distributors that had that accreditation. Okay, so what you have is two private actors, one of whom decided it would be a good idea to have its people it does business with only buy from people that NAVP accredited. There just isn't state action here.
I'm just trying to think of it. What if you had these state boards there at this meeting and they say, look, we don't really want the small players to be involved. And we just don't think they should be accredited, period. And so you say from the NAPB, why is that? We just don't want them.
Mm-hmm.
Don't they have a cause of action?
I don't think they would, Your Honor, because they're still, it's still a private entity.
What kind of cause of action would they, they're saying to, we control you, we're your members, NAPB, in this hypothetical, I'm not saying it's this case, and we don't want any small players. And we're telling you, this is what we collectively want. That is more than the consensus of our group. Just don't give them accreditation. You're telling me they don't have any claim whatsoever?
Well, I have a hard time thinking of what them having any kind of Section 1983 type claim.
No, let's go. New Jersey common law for due process.
No, because and again, the New Jersey is actually the most interesting example, because the New Jersey Board of Pharmacy isn't even the entity that licenses them. They can go on their merry way and continue to be licensed in the state of New Jersey and continue to run their wholesale distributor business, regardless of what NAVP says, and regardless what Optum requires. And they, in fact, did that. I mean, they were licensed for a number of years before Optum instituted this requirement, and they have continued to be licensed throughout. They have not had any licenses revoked or had anybody even talk about that.
What are the elements that are required under New Jersey common law for due process in connection with somebody either being denied membership or denied accreditation?
Well, if it has under only Falcone been used
and more, etc.
It has only been used in the context of exclusion.
My question to you, what are the elements that are required in order to show a violation of New Jersey common law for due process?
I think you have to show that they are excluding someone from from an association that is tantamount to being a prerequisite to doing business. Okay. And if that is in fact the case, then they've said some degree of due process might attain to that. And that's not what we have here. And
my recollection is that the elements that would be required are, would NAPB be a quasi-public entity? And two, would NAPB BP be acting arbitrarily? And my hypothetical to you was one where people were acting arbitrarily. And I would have thought you might have come back and said to me, but nothing here shows that in any way NAPB, PB, BP acted for anything other than health and public safety, and certainly not arbitrarily.
Well, certainly, I was trying to take your hypothetical,
What are the elements? And I thought the elements were quasi-public organization, and that quasi-public organization either denied accreditation or membership in an arbitrary fashion. Am I wrong about those elements?
Those are among them. Among the other ones would be there needs to be a protectable property interest in the first instance. And here there isn't one. In order to have any due process, before due process kicks in at all, there needs to be a protectable property interest. Mere expectation or aspiration of accreditation under New Jersey law doesn't rise to the level of a due process, a property interest that is cognizable or gives rise to any kind of due process.
And what would that property interest be?
It could potentially be a license. I mean, there's an important distinction between revoking a license and, you know, other types of, you know, expectation interests. And here they don't allege, and they certainly hasn't had any licensing, you know, actions taken at all.
Okay.
I would be happy to talk at you as long as you want. I'm sensitive to the fact that I have gone over my time.
No, you're on our time. Don't worry about it. I asked my colleagues, does either of you have any questions of Mr. Asmus?
I have no further questions.
I'm talking about Mr. Asmus, the one representative.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He is Optum RX's counsel. Judge Bibas, do you have any questions of Optum RX counsel?
No.
Okay, I don't either. So we'll go back and we'll get on rebuttal, Mr. Cullinan, then, please.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And thank you very much, Mr. Casey.
Judge Ambrose, maybe I think to pick up where both with your hypothetical and I think the question that you asked at the end of Mr. Casey as it relates to the question of the elements of a New Jersey claim, the hypothetical that you posed really is not that far off from what we have here.
As I understood it, I think there's maybe four elements. I gave two, Mr. Casey added a third, and there probably would be a fourth, would be actual damages, but there would be a protected interest,
right,
which means acting in effect, I would say arbitrarily, a reasonable likelihood that the interference caused the loss of a prospective gain or property interest in some way, shape, or form, and damages. And on this one, I don't see where NABP has acted in a way that's arbitrary.
Well, I think that the question, well, first of all, I think on that particular score, Your Honor, the question, this was on a motion to dismiss. This is not a case where we are deciding the case on a motion for summary judgment. Plaintiffs have clearly argued in this particular case here that NABP has acted in an arbitrary and inappropriate manner, both, I think, one, by imposing impermissible criteria in the form of two VOD criteria and making them impermissible requirements in order to obtain VOD accreditation in this particular case here. That's one, the issue in terms of prohibiting the wholesalers from sourcing from a pharmacy, and two, imposing heightened scrutiny, if you will, or making transactions with dual license entities somehow suspect, which does not fall into the term of a suspect transaction under federal law. But, you know, in this particular case here, the property interest that we are talking about is an occupational license. And to the case that I said it before for Judge Bibas, the Baffert versus New York Racing Association case before, is where you have an entity, whether they're licensing or not, that is essentially excluding a party from us being able to participate and take use of that occupational license, it can satisfy the standard for a property deprivation. In that particular case there, it was the ability of a horse trainer to be able to, who's based in California. So he had other options to be able to race his horses within the state of New York. I mean, I think that the point that we talked about with the Falcone case that was raised before, by the argument that NEBP is making here is that, well, you could go and you can operate in the county next to Middlesex County. Therefore, you're not harmed. And the New Jersey State Supreme Court explicitly rejected that argument.
But my question to you is, of that one of the four elements, arbitrariness or malice, what evidence is there alleged with respect that the NABP argued in that way?
Or the allegation in this case, I think, is twofold, Your Honor. It is one, that they applied impermissible criteria, and two, is that there was no meaningful due process at all. I think under the due process cases have been very clear that there's basically three elements, is that you're gonna have, in order for there to be a reasonable process, is that you're gonna have to have notice of what was the problem. And then you're gonna have to have some sort of mechanism through which to challenge the denial, and then and then have decision-making by a neutral decision-maker. And in this particular case here, as we laid out with respect to the process through which canceled applicants are subjected, there is no neutral decision-maker. There's no process at all. I mean, the irony of it is here is that, and this maybe gets into this whole distinction between membership and non-membership that I think Mr. Casey is relying upon, is that it is, NABP does provide process to those applicants that have been accredited and then are, to use the term of art, are being denied, but they provide no process whatsoever to those that have been canceled, which is the situation in which our clients found themselves. They had to submit repeated applications. And as we point out in our papers, the fact that they, after the litigation was commenced, based upon almost an identical record, they were subsequently accredited, gives rise to a presumption that the reasons that they were denied before this, for the first couple of times around, is that those decisions were arbitrary.
Anything further that you wanted to add?
On this point, no, Your Honor. And I know that there are some other topics areas that we didn't cover, but unless the court has any questions on those areas,
I have further questions. Judge Roth, Judge Bibas?
Nothing further.
Judge Bibas?
Nothing.
Okay, thank you. Thank you to both counsel for, sorry, Mr. Asmus, we didn't get you in on the parade here, but we really didn't have any questions of you. Thank you to Messrs. Casey and Colnan for well-presented arguments, and we'll take the matter under advisement and adjourn for today.